You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Mama told me, son, go and play in the yard. Papa said, go and play, you gotta break your stomach, go and scream real hard. Go play in the yard. Woo! Go play in the yard. You gotta burn your stomach.
Welcome to Inside the Yard. Thank you so much for being with us. A couple of Orioles broadcasters, Jeff Arnold and Brett Hollander, chatting up about the Orioles on the program today. The one they call Big Mike, Mike Bauman, and also from MassinSports.com, Steve Molesky, talking about Orioles prospects in the minor leagues. But Jeff, let's start with Big Mike, someone you covered and followed and called games for in his minor league career. Tell me about young Big Mike and his road to the show.
Yeah, young Big Mike was a guy that was all power. And I watch him pitch right now, and there are a lot of similarities to how he was when I saw him pitch. I mean, a guy that's going to be predominantly mid to upper 90s with his fastball, and then had like this hard slider or cutter that can kind of bottom out on you. And you know, a little bit of an unusual delivery, and I think we've all kind of seen that a little bit where he sort of leans back a little bit, and there's some deception to it, and there's just not a lot of guys, I think, that do it the way he does it. And it's going to be interesting to see kind of what happens. I mean, we talked to him on the podcast about developing his curveball and his changeup. And I think those two pitches are going to be really key because I think he learned facing the Kansas City Royals is a lot different than facing the Toronto Blue Jays. And their lineup, which is deep and has so much length and is a playoff caliber lineup with a lot of young, talented guys that, let's face it, not only are they really good right now, but they're not going anywhere either. So you need to have multiple pitches. You're going to be able to get guys out. I think him developing those next two is going to be really important for him as he tries to go a couple times through a lineup like that, because as we know, the Yankees, the numbers might be down this year, but you do know they're capable of that because of the names in that lineup. And then you also know that the Red Sox are the same exact way, and the Rays will just make you wait, and then they pitch really well. So I think him developing those next two pitches is going to be key. And I think that's been something that he's continued to work on since his minor league days.
Listen, there's a lot of different thoughts, and I've thought about him and talked about him for much of my entire life, but it is very difficult for the Orioles to draft and develop pitching inside the American League East. It is just very hard to do. The best lineups, the smallest ballparks, the lineups are patient. They're powerful. They're full of big names, and it can go one of a few ways. And this has been debated throughout time. Is it better to get called up, take your lumps, and see where you are when you get to the other side? Or do you want to protect these guys? Because once you get beaten like that, it's very hard to mentally recover. And there's no perfect or right answer to it. I've seen it play out a number of different ways, but I know fans are frustrated and concerned, especially when it comes to pitching right now. I remember Chris Tillman getting called up in 09 and 10 and 11, and he was really bad until the day he wasn't. And it doesn't always work that way. I think about Brian Mattis, who was the fourth overall pick and had a really good rookie year in 2010. And Mattis never really made as a starter, but found a home as a reliever. Zach Britton had his moments as a rookie, but eventually struggled learning to pitch in the American League East. And they found a home for him as a closer, worked out for Zach, and Jake Arrieta didn't make it here. It was too hard and went somewhere else and found success. So the point of the story is you need a lot of arms and you hope a few break through, whether it's as starters, relievers, leverage guys, fringe guys, whatever it might be. You need lots of arms. It's so hard here.
It's excruciatingly hard. And you don't see many offenses out there that can get no hit for six innings. And then one inning comes along and you score 11 runs, 11 hits, and you get four home runs. But that's the kind of scary offense that the Blue Jays are, for instance. And that's the kind of offense that you're going to see in the American League East. And you're right. There is no perfect way to go about it. I think when you look at some of the draft strategy that the Orioles have kind of deployed in the last, you know, couple of years with Mike Elias here, they've taken a lot of position players. I think some of it's just because those have been the best players that they viewed on their board. But I think another part of it too is going back to what you were saying, that it is very hard to develop minor league pitching and that pitching coming up to the American League East. And I think it's hard to develop pitching in general just because of the injury concerns,
yeah,
the inning stuff, and also the style of pitching nowadays.
And let's face it, they protect them, and you've seen this firsthand, in the minor leagues too. They don't really let them fail there. You know, if you have a really bad inning, you're yanked because they're so concerned about your innings limit. You're not really going to learn how to pitch that way.
And I don't think, Brett, you really learn how to pitch until you take your first lumps in the major leagues and then you go down. Yeah. I really don't think personally you learn how to pitch until that's the case. And we heard that when we were talking to some of the people at the Royals, and it's a very different story in the Central versus the East. I don't think anyone's going to deny that. But if you don't come up to the major leagues and see what these lineups are like, then it's very hard for you to get a sense as to what you need to do to succeed. Because once you see what it is, and once you see what you, that's your test. That's where you're like, okay, I need to really fix this, 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 and this, because then this is going to happen and this inning is going to happen and this will take place. But, you know, I think the fact that somebody like Grayson Rodriguez, the way that they're bringing him along and all these things they're going into with him. And I feel like that's super important, but I think you have to have a certain level of patience with certain guys, realizing that they can be a highly touted prospect, but when you come up to the American League East, it's a totally different story. And, you know, I think some of the other things with position players as well is that you bring them on board. And then sometimes, you know, when you're going out to compete, a lot of teams will eventually use prospects that they have to go out and get established major league pitching, yeah, guys that have been around and have an idea as to how to navigate that, because coming right up from the minors and going right into a division like the American League East is harrowing to say
no question. And even when it comes to greats, as great as he is, as talented as he is, I don't know, and you don't know, and the Orioles don't know who he is until they see him, have it handed to him, leaving the field of Yankee Stadium or Fenway Park. And that's when you find out what you have, because that day's coming. And you can think you have a great prospect and a really talented guy, but you know, I feel bad for Dean Kramer. I mean, the amount of American League East starts this guy's at, when he faced the Texas Rangers, he was pretty good. When he faced the Cleveland Indians, he was pretty good, but not our world right now. So it'd be really interesting to follow, but this is what Mike Elias and company have to figure out. So let's get to another Orioles pitching prospect, Big Mike Bauman.
Experience an O's game with the convenience and privacy of your very own suite. A variety of affordable single game suites throughout the ballpark are available. Enjoy exclusive access to the game with climate controlled interior seating, a private restroom, and comfortable outside seating. Visit Orioles.com/suites for more information.
All right, Jeff, special guest with us right now, Orioles rookie right-hander who goes by Big Mike. Mike Bauman is with us. And Mike, first of all, congratulations on the call, and tell us how and when you got the news.
Yeah, thanks. I got the call last Monday night from our AAA manager. So he just told me to pack my bags and go up to Baltimore Tuesday morning. And next thing I know, I'm in a big league game at Camden Yards pitching against the Kansas City Royals. So it was pretty surreal moment, and everything was just a blur.
Did you have a sense that it was coming? I mean, I know you had a really good start before you got called up, but did you have a sense that you were going to get a promotion to the Orioles?
No, honestly, not really. I kind of just expected to finish the year out in Norfolk. So once I got that phone call, everything was just it was just super unexpected.
And then you get to Camden Yards and you're put right in the middle of a game. You end up being a big factor in that game. Was Darren Holmes just like, it's time, Mike, you're going in?
Yeah, he was helping me out. That's my first game out of the bullpen this year. So he was helping me out, giving their plan was to give me enough time to get warm, get ready, kind of treat it like a normal starter routine out of the bullpen. So he really helped out. He really helped out with my timing. So it made it a lot easier.
How much pitching had you done out of the bullpen, you know, in your career prior, and also maybe like before you became a professional? Have you pretty much always been a starter and was kind of coming out of the bullpen, you know, like you said, sort of a foreign concept? Because it from what I remember about it, it didn't seem like you'd done much relieving like ever.
No, I think I can count on one hand how many times I've done it. I did it once in high school. I did it once in summer ball in college. I did it my first professional outing. I came out of the pen, and then in Bowie in 2019, I came out of the pen twice.
Mike, you had one really successful outing in the big leagues, your first one against Kansas City, and then your last one against Toronto was tough. Obviously, that's a really hot team at the top of their game right now. Tell me about that experience, going through it, and what you take away.
Yeah, every outing is going to be a learning experience. And from that one, all I could do in that moment is just compete and, go out and just get the game moving and get some outs and, try and get three innings best I could. That's a hot team. That's a really good team. And all I could do is just try and go out and attack those guys.
How big do you think it's going to be for you to continue to develop your curveball and your changeup? Because you have a power arsenal with the fastball and the slider, which are two really good pitches. But how big is it going to be for you when pitching in the major leagues to use that curveball and use that changeup and to probably be throwing those pitches maybe a little bit more to help complement your other two pitches?
I think it's going to be massive, being able to protect my fastball slider being my two best pitches. So hopefully moving forward, I can do a better job of getting those curveballs and changeups in the zone moving forward and being able to use them to my advantage.
You've had kind of some injuries the last two seasons. And even this year, I remember Brandon Hyde commenting in spring training over your bullpen. It was like, wow, that's what a bullpen is supposed to look like. And then you kind of got injured. The stopping and starting for you the last few years, how nice will it be to get into some normalcy and actually maybe show up to spring training next year feeling really good about things?
Yeah, it'll be great having a normal off season, starting, having a normal lifting schedule, a normal throwing program. But the team helped me out this past year getting back on track. They laid out a great rehab program for me, so I was happy to have that. And hopefully next year I just can come in fresh and treat it like a normal off season.
Like, what was it like when you walk into the clubhouse and your former college teammate Austin Hayes is there? How much easier did that make it for you to get acclimated to the new environment?
A lot easier. Hayes made me feel a lot more welcomed. He came up, gave me a big hug when he first saw me. And then at the end of my outing, he came up to me again and gave me another big hug. And it was awesome to have him playing behind me. It's been a few years, so I was never able to catch up to him in the minors. He got up too quick.
So you went to school with Hayes, but you're in Zach Lowther's wedding. Tell me about that and how tight you two are, you and Zach.
Yes, Zach was the – when we first got drafted, Zach was the first person I met when I got off the plane. And from then on, he was my first roommate, my first catch partner. And we went up together at each level for the most part. So – being in his wedding with a couple of other guys in the system, that's pretty cool. And it just kind of goes to show, the kind of relationships you can build in pro ball here.
Going back to Hayes for a second, take us through the story of when you got to watch him play in the major leagues for the first time, when he was down at Tropicana Field.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I don't know how you remember that, but that, yeah. I saw him in Tampa. That must have been 2017. So he moved quick through the system, and we're all proud of him in Jacksonville. So it's been awesome following his career. He's a good ball player and he plays hard.
How good of a hitter was he at Jacksonville?
It was phenomenal. It was like every time he got up to bat, he was gonna hit a double or a home run.
Did you ever get to face him in like inner squads or things like that? And if so, like, what was that like when you were playing together in college?
I don't remember too much going against him. I know I faced him my freshman year. I don't know about my sophomore year. But he did a lot of things on that field that you just won't see from other guys at that level in college. So, he was electric ball player on the field, and he really teaches guys how to take care of the business on and off the field.
Now, your nickname is Big Mike, which goes back, you were telling me, a long time. You're 6'4", but you're a big dude. What other sports did you play growing up?
I played basketball up until high school, and then I played football all the way through. Wow. And honestly, I think football might be my favorite sport. So,
what position were you?
Yeah, I was an offensive and defensive lineman.
Nice. Very in the nice. Trenches.
Basketball? How did you play any basketball at all? Like, were you a good basketball player?
Yeah, I played – well, I wouldn't say I was good, but I got a little tired running up and down the court, so it wasn't for me. But I tried to stay around the perimeter. I wasn't much of a shooter, though.
So you come from an area where I would say there are not a lot of baseball stars. There are some. Tell me about life growing up in Minnesota and cold weather environments and baseball life there growing up.
Yeah, growing up, baseball is just one of three seasons for us. You know, most of my friends, we all play different sports. A lot of, you know, a lot of hockey players, a lot of football, and then a lot of, you know, baseball in the spring. So we were lucky to get out during the summer. It was tough to find space in the winter to go and throw and hit, but we made it work. And then once I got down to Florida, I didn't realize – you know, how much of a bonus it was to be able to play year round. And it was a different world down there. So I definitely learned a lot in the first 4 months I was down at school in Jacksonville.
Being from Minnesota, you told me before that the Twins were your favorite team. Who is your favorite player and how many Twins games would you go to a year?
I'd go to a couple games every year. And I'd have to say Joe Mauer. He was just the hometown hero there growing up. And he's one of the best catchers. So, yeah, Joe Mauer, and that was a fun team to watch growing up.
Mike, what was the name of your town that you grew up in? And where is that?
Montemita. It's just east of St. Paul.
You do any ice fishing at all, like in the wintertime? Have you ever done any of that?
No, I'm kind of a fake Minnesota when it Minnesotan when it comes to that. No ice fishing, no hockey, no, not much winter activity for me.
No, like snowmobiles or anything like that?
No, never drove a snowmobile. Not much of a snowboarder. Never really got out to try all that stuff.
My kind of guy, Mike. And I asked this to Ryan McKenna the other day, who's from New Hampshire. What's the coldest weather you had to play ball in?
I think we got down to 18 degrees and it was snowing.
Did you have to shovel the snow off the field like before you could play? Did you guys have to do that?
We did that 1 year in high school. Before the season started, we would, you know, help out, shovel the field to try and speed up the process and get out quicker.
All right, Mike, it's time for our fun five baseball questions. Ready to go?
Yeah.
All right, favorite baseball movie?
For the Love of the Game.
Nice. We haven't gotten that in a while. High school senior year ERA?
Maybe one.
So you didn't give up many runs?
No.
I'm guessing you had a few punch outs too.
Yeah, just a couple.
How hard were you throwing in high school, just out of curiosity?
I was probably – like 87, 89. I was a late bloomer.
Most influential baseball person in your life?
I'd say my brother and my dad.
What is your favorite minor league city to play or visit?
Charlotte, North Carolina.
Jeff, that has to be winning
easily the leader in the clubhouse. Yeah. Not even close. That is number one.
Mike, name one talent you have outside of baseball.
Oh, man. I don't know if I have any.
Well, football.
Oh, yeah. Can we say football?
Do you golf?
I was. I was trying to get into it during COVID. But fantasy football takes up most of my time.
How's your team this year?
Which one? I got like seven teams.
Seven teams?
Yeah. Well, two. I can't say no. I can't turn down my friends when they ask for a new league.
The problem is you end up facing yourself in every league. You end up having players on both teams. It just gets too confusing.
Real quick, Can you solve a Rubik's Cube? Because Ryan McKenna joined us last week and he said that was his special talent. He said he can solve a Rubik's Cube.
No, I can't.
None of us can either. We can't either. No.
Well, Mike Bauman, we appreciate so much. Congrats on the big call to the show.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Hey, Birdland, the bird is back and ready to make a special appearance at your next event. Add some Orioles magic to your birthday celebration, wedding, or corporate party by booking the bird today. Proceeds benefit the Orioles Charitable Foundation. Book your bird appearance today at orioles.com/bird.
All right, massinsports.com. Steve Molesky is with us right now. And Steve, let's start with Grayson Rodriguez, who had only a 3-inning outing. And I have to say, when I saw that, I was kind of nervous. I wanted to text you. And then you quickly put out there on Twitter that this was a part of an overall plan. By the way, 3 perfect innings for Grayson. What is the plan now in the innings limit as this season comes to a close?
Well, he is expected to get one more start in the regular season. The final week is this week. By the time some people listen to this, I mean, he may have already made it. And then if Bowie does make the playoffs, one more start there. And I mean, if you give him 2 5-inning starts, that brings him to 108, 110, whatever, something like that, which is what the Orioles are comfortable with, sets him up for, you know, 150 next year, which some of those innings I think we can safely anticipate will be in Baltimore. And, you know, he's on the way. I mean, he can start next year at Triple-A, see him a lot in spring training, maybe even start the year in Baltimore. It seems unlikely, but he's knocking on the door now. I mean, this kid has checked every box and then some. Pitch development strong. It's a year where he told me he really made a lot of gains in terms of scouting and attacking hitters and things they want him to implement beyond just feeding them with his talent, which he's going to need in the big leagues. You can't just out-talent everybody. So really has learned a lot.
Gunnar Henderson, you know, a week after Kyle Stowers gets promoted to Triple-A, Gunnar Henderson's going up to Double-A as the Bay Sox try and compete for a playoff spot. Were you surprised at all about this move? I mean, it's a second jump for him this year. The numbers at Delmarva were good. It seemed like the power numbers were okay when he was at Aberdeen. But were you surprised at all by them to push Henderson up to Double-A?
I was a little surprised by that. He got off to a terrible start at Aberdeen. I want to say it was like 1-for-30, 1-for-32, something like that. He was hitting, you know, under 100. And then he got it going. He never got sizzling hot. But what he did in the last couple of weeks is the extra base hits were coming. I looked at September. He had 8 hits, but 6 were extra base hits. He leaves Aberdeen with an OPS of 775, which is above league average, which is, I mean, he came a long way in a short amount of time. And I don't think this is like a mid-year promotion, like if we were in mid-season and he's gone forever. But he probably is in terms of Aberdeen. But what I think it is give him a taste, see if he can help Bowie get in the playoffs. And if they do, he'll get a few extra games, you know, which is not a bad thing in a 120-game season on the farm. And so I think he's ready. I mean, he hit nearly 300 in September. That's trending up, you know, 20 years old in Double-A, though. I mean, wow, gets reunited with his best friend, Westberg. And that's just cool to see this kid and what he's doing. So he didn't tear up Aberdeen, but again, 775. That's not a bad OPS from where he started.
And they clearly want to push, I think, the Hendersons and the Westbergs and the Stowers and the Watsons of the world. They want to hit the accelerator. I know some fans don't feel that way because Grayson Rodriguez and Adley Rutschman aren't in Baltimore right now. But if you're a college hitter or Gunnar Henderson, you're getting moved quickly.
Yeah, I think looking back, the Orioles handled some of these guys beautifully. You know, Henderson and Gunnar started at Delmarva. We can forget that now. It feels like a lifetime away. But that first month at Delmarva, that was the magical middle of the order. They were averaging 7 runs a game. J.D. Mundy was with them, and they were just raking. And then they quickly moved them, you know, later saying after the lost 2020 season, some of the guys we wanted to start conservatively, let them establish and then move them. And so that was a good idea because, you know, now those guys rolled into Aberdeen with a lot of confidence. And even though they didn't take it by storm right away, they eventually got it going there. And so they are being challenged. They're learning. They're growing. They're soaking up the hitting program that the Orioles are implementing. They're real students of it, and they believe in it. And so it's been really solid years for some of those guys.
I think everybody, Steve, is thinking about Adley Rutschman coming up to the Orioles next year, Grayson Rodriguez coming up to the Orioles next year. What do you think the likelihood is that Kyle Stowers is with the O's at some point next year? And you and I were talking about this yesterday, Jordan Westberg and just all the things that he is doing. What do you think is the likelihood that maybe Stowers and Westberg are with the Orioles next year too?
I think it's good. I mean, right now, Stowers might be the heir apparent to right field. I'm not giving away Anthony Santander's job just yet. You know, he's a pretty good player too. But, I mean, Stowers has just passed some people by. I mean, Yusniel Diaz, unfortunately, with a kind of a lost year, he blew by him. And, you know, Robert Nystrom's right there. The Orioles, every time I talk to Oriole people, Nystrom's name comes up. They're just so impressed with his season. So we can't rule him out either and act like it's Stowers and nobody else, because there are others. But Stowers has had an eye-popping year. The power, again, this guy soaks up the data and analytics. He loves it. He's a Stanford kid. He's a very smart kid. And he loves to process this and then take it to the field. And he did. You know, he's hitting home runs now at Norfolk after, again, a slow start. And then he got going. So there's a theme here. These guys got bumped up and challenged. It took them a little bit. And then they got it going. So big year for him, man. I mean, if it wasn't for Adley, he might win player of the year. And if it wasn't for him, Westberg might win player of the year. But, you know, Westberg's a guy, Jeff, I love his overall game, maybe as well as almost anybody on the farm. Real good defender, real good hitter, wears out right and right center field, all fields hitter, line to line, plate discipline, leadership skills. He's a little older than some of these guys because of college draft pick. Real leader. I mean, it's a great, nice group that hopefully will join some top talent already there, and now you're looking at a lineup.
Yeah, and if people are listening, they're saying, is this year I want to go to spring training and maybe see some young players? I imagine, and I can't speak on behalf of the team, but pretty much every day, Stowers, Rutschman, Westberg are going to get tons of at-bats next spring in Sarasota, and I'm sure Grayson Rodriguez is going to make starts or at least make several appearances in Grapefruit League baseball.
Yeah, and I mean, guys we haven't seen yet, like Kyle Bradish, who the organization's very high on, Kevin Smith, bunch of guys who were at AA and AAA, whether it's Blaine Knight or Cody Sedlock, all of a sudden has good AAA stats and almost no one's noticing. You know, so these guys are out there. And like John Means emerged, someone the Orioles hope will emerge and be a three or a four starter or a solid one through five guy. Maybe beyond just the big names that we look at, you know, someone, Gene Pinto, maybe in a year or two could be that guy, 20 years old at Delmarva, pitching great right now. So fun to see. I recently wrote about Zach Peake at Aberdeen and Brandon Young. You know, they're not blowing you away on the stat sheet. They're good stats, but they're steady progress. Their pay rates are great. And the Orioles really love some of the secondaries they have.
Steve, last one for me. Ryan Mountcastle, just as we're taping this, tied Cal Ripken's single-season rookie home run record with the team. And I know you've gotten to see him play for a really long period of time. If you take out his April, I mean, he is right up there with American League Rookie of the Year candidates. What do you remember about some of those early days of Ryan Mountcastle in the minor leagues, watching him play at some of the lower levels, the conversations you had with people then, and kind of now seeing what he has become since those early days of him in professional baseball?
It seemed, Jeff, the focus in his first couple years was defense. Where would he play? How would he do? Shortstop, that wasn't working out. Third base, maybe not. Uh-oh, is he going to be a left fielder? Then started the panic set in from some fans. Well, you know, this kid might not have a position. But all along the way, he's hitting. He hit really well at Bowie. He was the International League MVP at Norfolk. They hadn't had one in about 20-some years. He was the Oriole Player of the Year the same year he did that at AAA. So all along the way, he kept hitting. And I remember interviewing one or two spring trainings ago, and I said, it looks like you're shortening up with two strikes. He said, you know, I don't stride as much. I want to strike out a little less. I don't want to shorten my swing where I can't do damage, but I want to put more balls in play. And I thought, this kid's really thinking this thing through, man. He's trying to become a complete hitter. And he's never going to be a high walk rate guy. We know that. Aggressive hitter. He doesn't get deep counts. He does his damage early. But as long as he doesn't chase like April, look at what the stats show. So this is a productive middle-of-the-order hitter who's not going to give you a 12 walk rate. He just never is. But it's okay because there's other numbers. There's 160-game numbers he's posted coming into this Yankee series. That is impressive.
I think he's the best offensive prospect drafted and developed by the club since Nick Markakis. And Nick got to the big leagues in 06. So it's been a while. But I think that's the kind of prospect we're talking about, and someone who's a legit Rookie of the Year candidate.
It's exciting. And it's exciting to think that now there are guys who have legit numbers on the farm now, like Westberg and Stowers and Mundy and Adley, of course, that we're, you know, you don't have to hype these guys. They hype themselves with their performance. And all we have to do is report on their achievements. And you don't have to make a stretch to say, will Adley be a good major leaguer? Yeah, we think so. Well, Westberg, yeah, Stowers, can he hit 30 in the big leagues? I don't think there's anybody that would say that's not very possible. So now you can start to, I asked Matt Blood in a radio interview about a week ago, do you guys ever get in the room, you and Mike and your staff, and start plotting out a year from now and dreaming on what it would look like? And, you know, I think they do it just like fans do it, you know, thinking ahead to where this could lead.
Steve Molesky from MassinSports.com. Steve, we really appreciate it. Thank you.
You got it, guys.
Get all the best Orioles ticket deals in one place, including single-game tickets, ticket packs, special offers, and more. We got you covered at the Orioles Ticket Marketplace. This is your place to score exclusive deals, so check back often for the latest opportunities. Don't wait to purchase last minute at the box office. Ticket prices are the same at Orioles.com/tickets to purchase.
All right, Jeff, we just talked to Steve Molesky about Ryan Mountcastle, and you said this as we record, and it could very well be different by the time this drops. He's at 28 homers. He's tied Cal on the Orioles all-time rookie home run list. His numbers are prolific. Now, take Rookie of the Year aside, I think he's probably got to blow away the offensive field to win the award, because he'll probably be graded on a curve because he's an Oriole playing for a struggling team, unfortunately, and that's not fair, but probably the reality of the world. But what are we talking about long-term with Ryan Mountcastle, Jeff? I mean, are we talking about 35 home runs year in, year out? I mean, you think about his April this year and his overall trajectory, I think that's what we're talking about.
I think it is too, because this is the first time that he's really failed. You know, think about it. April, and he said this recently, I was looking over my shoulder as to whether or not they're going to send me down or not. And we had him on our podcast, I want to say this was like January, February, whatever. And I think he talked about hitting maybe two home runs when he was a senior in high school because of the massive field that he played on and things like that. But he had a high batting average, and the power numbers have always been there every place that he's gone. And offensively, he never had any problems in the minors. He hit everywhere he went. He mentioned like a month-long stretch when he was at Delmarva, but he hit everywhere he went until he got up to this April. And what transpired, frankly, was exactly what I thought was going to happen. I mean, Brandon Hyde talked about it in the offseason, and Ryan Mountcastle knew it, and it was mentioned again at spring training. This league is going to make adjustments to you, and it's going to be on you to make adjustments back. So what took place in April, it's like, okay, well, didn't we sort of all expect this? But then you get to the very end of the month, and he was searching for it, but he didn't lose it. You know, there was still a level of confidence that he had that he was going to figure it out. And I feel like this year it reinforced some things, and he made some adjustments, you know, on a variety of different levels that have gotten him to this point. And since May 31st, you know, you had me look it up recently, he's got one of the highest OPSs in the American League and one of the best OPSs in all of baseball. I feel like he's going to be somebody that is consistently up for, is this guy going to be competing in the All-Star game?
Yeah.
In a home run derby. I think we're seeing that that's possible. I think he's going to continue to work on his defense. I think he's played fine defensively at first base. And I think that the power numbers are going to continue to be there. And, you know, how many swings have we seen him take recently where he gets a pitch in and he'll either hit it the other way or he'll keep his hands inside the ball and still get it over the fence.
Amazing.
And straight down the line, when those are balls that in April are rolled over foul, lined off the screen, hit softly back to the pitcher, hit softly on the ground to the left side. How many of those, I mean, that to me is like something that I've seen is you see how he's pitched and just his commitment to the big part of the field. And I really have been so impressed by what he's done. And I feel like that, like you said, I think American League Rookie of the Year is going to be tough. I think he has a really good case for it. But I think a part of his candidacy should be about, look at what he's done in spite of April. Yeah. And I think when you consider that and put that in perspective, it helps increase that candidacy.
Really fun to watch. All right, that does it for Inside the Yard. Jeff, great stuff. We'll chat next week on our program. And thank you to Mike Baumann and to Steve Molesky for joining us today. And thank you guys for being with us. We'll be back next week on Inside the Yard.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. You guys know I'm always up for a good MVP story, and one of the best stories is Wasabi Technology. Wasabi is the world's hottest cloud storage company, and it's become the go-to provider for professional and collegiate sports teams, including 20 Major League Baseball teams like the Red Sox and NHL teams like the Bruins and Vancouver Canucks. Even the Liverpool Football Club is getting in on the Wasabi action. So why is Wasabi the MVP? Well, Wasabi was purpose-built to free businesses from skyrocketing storage costs and unpredictable transaction fees that the Amazon of the world are charging. In fact, Wasabi is up to 80% less than those hyperscalers and doesn't charge a cent for businesses to access their data. From Wasabi's AI-enabled intelligent media storage, Wasabi Air, to the industry's only cloud storage service with triple protection against cyber criminals, data deletion, and ransomware, Wasabi's taking the lead in driving innovation in data storage and helping sports teams to unleash the power of their data. Wasabi, another Boston-based championship team.